This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, a congressman wants to make the Patriot Act permanent. And are you ever too young to learn? From NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Joe Davidson, an editor at The Washington Post. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, joins us today from member station WLRN in Miami. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Maryland. All right, folks, let's talk about something that we've been looking at for quite some time, and now there is a proposal to make the Patriot Act permanent. This was proposed by a Republican from Wisconsin, James Sensenbrenner, and the idea of making such a controversial act permanent speaks to what critics were concerned about all along, George Curry.
Yeah, there are some provisions in there. The schedule will be revised, but that's just the House has one version. The Senate would probably have a stronger one. The real problem is this was done in haste. A lot of things are not related to terrorism. They're really talking about cramping the styles and liberties of Americans. And there were certain sunset provisions, I think about 16, put into this law, hoping that it would expire, of course, requiring that they be renewed. And I think the most troubling part is the lack of sufficient judicial review in some cases. We already have the apparatus set up. If the law enforcement agency need to go and get warrants without the person knowing that they can go and appear before a judge, and that's already intact, should be intact, but under the law, they're allowed to avoid that and just basically issue themselves warrants.
Joe, there are going to be people who will say, just take a look at London last week, and we don't much care about the infringement upon certain niceties that have been provided to us in this country. We want to be safe.
Well, I think that the Democrats are trying to come back with the argument that the administration really has not adequately funded transportation legislation, some of which is designed to have these security measures in it to help transportation facilities avoid the kind of thing or defend against the kind of tragedy that we saw in London. And so the Democrats who are opposed to making the Patriot Act provisions that George referred to permanent are attacking it not just on the basis of whether or not the Patriot Act is in itself effective or overreaching, but also trying to say the administration, while putting all of its, giving a lot of its attention at least to the Patriot Act, really isn't doing enough in terms of basic homeland security measures to defend the transportation arteries, to defend the ports, and other things like that. So they're trying to divert some of that attention away to some of these kind of nuts and bolts security issues.
Laura, there are going to be people in Congress who are going to suggest, those who want to see this act become permanent, who are going to suggest they've already played watchdog, they've turned aside new sought powers by the Bush administration. The House recently voted by a wide margin to curtail the FBI's ability under the Patriot Act to seize things like library cards and bookstore records, etc.
Well, yes, and as in any negotiation, often certain sides will breathe a sigh of relief because they could say, well, it could be worse. We're not going to do the bookstore thing. We're not going to do the library thing. So, let's take a deep breath and be happy with it as it is. And I think the Bush administration can, though, make a very powerful argument. It's a very simple one. There have been no major or any significant attacks at all in the United States, unlike London last week, since the Patriot Act, since September 11th, since the Patriot Act was enacted. And they're going to argue that that has a lot to do with the curbs that we've been able to put in place. Just the other day, Michael Chertoff, the national security chief, the homeland security chief, said that he believes that, steps like being able to pick up immigrants on small offenses, police being able to be much more active in getting folks out of the country if they have any kind of criminal record, that has helped to curb some of the potential acts. I think one of the things we don't know is what we've prevented. We know we're preventing things, but we don't really know why.
Hey, Joe, Laura, the problem with that is, though, if you take credit for it, you're going to take the blame. And that's the real trick here. They can't really take credit for not doing it because we don't know why. They may have decided to wait till we have less attention, because if you're going to take the credit, you better be ready for the blame.
It's also like trying to prove a negative, which is always very difficult.
But it's it's a very emotional argument, and people feel more secure. And I think a lot of people, a lot of regular American voters, are feeling like they're willing to give away maybe a little bit of their freedom for a little bit of security.
Do you feel more secure? I don't. Do you, Laura? Do you feel more
no,
secure?
No, I don't. I don't. But no, I think a lot of people, either. I think a lot of people do. And when you look at London last week, and you say this is not happening here. They're going. I mean, I think the message is the terrorists are going elsewhere. And
but you know, I mean,
I think that's a very powerful argument.
I was getting on the Washington Metro system that day, and I was just thinking I had two bags with me, and I could simply walk on the subway with those bags, and I realized how easy it would be to do that kind to do the same kind of thing in Washington or New York or anywhere else that was done in London. Yet at the same time, trying to make our subway stops and bus stops. Like airports certainly isn't practical. But that's the kind of thing. I mean, my point is to make you feel really secure, you would have to do things that simply are not workable.
Isn't that part of the catch-22 that Washington finds itself in? To a great degree, the longer we go without another issue, problem, terror scare here in the United States, the more comfortable people are going to become to some degree. It's human nature. The other end of that is they don't want to see those kinds of lines that people complain about at airports with subway systems and bus systems and the like. And isn't that the catch-22?
Well, you know, I'm not so sure that after the bombings in London that people are feeling really more secure. I mean, even though it did not happen in the United States, I think people do understand that if it could happen in London, which, after all, has had to deal with terrorism far longer than the United States, much before 9/11 because of the situation in Northern Ireland for so many years, if it could happen there where they presumably have had some, you know, experience and training in anti-terrorism measures, I think people do understand it can happen here as well.
All right. Let me turn our attention to Massachusetts and an interesting case that's coming up. A man was arrested during a New Year's Eve party at a private home. He's filed a lawsuit arguing that he has a constitutional right to be drunk on private property as long as he didn't cause a public disturbance. And what happened, obviously, is during a party that got a little loud, police came to calm it down, saw that he was drunk, and they took him into what's called protective custody and locked him up for 9 hours until the effects of the alcohol wore off. He's saying, look, I wasn't going to drive. I wasn't in the public square. I wasn't bothering anybody. I should be allowed to be drunk in private.
Well, I think it's a little more complicated than that, Ed. First of all, exactly. Somebody had been throwing something at the cops, and they came in. That's the,
right,
that's
I
first
said
thing.
They came as a disturbance, but hit.
Okay, but
to
the second part of that
initially.
Is, all right, I'm not through. The second part of that, though, is he had picked up a camera and started videotaping them. That's when they really got upset with him. That led to these charges. It wasn't just a matter of him being drunk, but his point was that if I'm on the private party, I can get drunk. I didn't plan to drive. I was going to spend the night here. Why are you arresting me?
And at a private home, George Curry, I have every right to pick up a video camera and videotape what I choose as long as I am not interfering with your arrest.
Well, yeah, and there's no right, law against videotaping somebody.
Yeah, but George, I think, you know, a lot of the details of that incident are alleged. And, you know, how it is when you get into a he said, she said, especially with the cops. We've all been at parties where the cops have shown up and, you know, things can get out of control and it's hard to know who's to blame. My issue with this
have
case
we all
is
been
that
there, Laura? Is that just you?
I know you're all going to agree. You have to agree on that one. Anyway. Now, yes, you can get drunk in your own home. The issue I have with this case is this was not his own home. He was visiting a friend. A friend was having the party. He alleges that he was planning on staying overnight, but this was not his home. This was a place that he was visiting. The cop's point of view on this is, you know, he could go out, he could drive, right. He could hurt someone, he could hurt himself.
But the lawsuit is public property is what they're contending.
But what's the significant difference if it was his friend's
home?
I'm sorry,
private property, not public.
And the friend says, yes, he was going to spend the night. So it's not just just not this individual saying it, but if the friend backs it up, then what's the significant difference whether or not it's his friend's home or his own home?
That could be the case. I'm not sure that the friend was standing there with the cops when the arguing was going on, backing him up. And if that wasn't the case, the cops have to make a decision on the spot when they've got a conflict here, when they've got somebody who's potentially drunk. So I think you got to remember the cops are in a position legally where they have to protect the public and they have to sometimes protect people from themselves.
But that's not protecting the public, Laura.
That's not protecting
if the man
public.
Was if the man was going to walk out the door and get in the car and drive it, most certainly.
But
if
the alleged needy ones were there, I agree with that on that on you on that. But if he's at a friend's house and planning to spend the night, what business is the cops?
I think there are competing interests here between sometimes you have to protect someone from themselves. If somebody can get drunk to the point where they are actually a danger to themselves, it's not the public. But here you don't necessarily have that evidence. You have somebody in a private home where they at least say they were going to stay there, and there's apparently no evidence to the contrary that they were not going to stay there. They were not driving. And so I think you do have a situation where it comes down to a question of someone's right to kind of entertain themselves, perhaps in an inappropriate manner, but a manner that's not illegal, and yet the police taking action. And I think that's the kind of thing that this will definitely end up in court over.
All right, we'll see what comes of that case. Let's turn to public and private, and now an interesting note on a story that we talked about very briefly because we wanted to protect the privacy of this person, and now we see they're coming out and putting all of the dirty laundry out, and that's Terry McMillan and her soon-to-be ex-husband who announced that he was gay. He, of course, was, many say, the reason that Terry was inspired, the muse, if you will, to how Stella got her groove back. And the question here is not so much the McMillan squabble with her soon-to-be ex-husband, her estranged husband, but the idea of whether or not it's an interesting comment on our society that people now tend to go to the media, whether they be celebrity and with the advent of reality television or not, air their dirty laundry in public. It seems to be very, very commonplace.
Well, you know, it's been...
It's about money, I think, and publicity. They go to the media because, and in this case, both sides have been very prominent in the media. They know they're going to get a lot of attention. Her husband, she's accused her husband of releasing this story or going public with this as a way of making it look like she was trying to get attention for her book. Either way, the book is going to, her next book, the book that she's got coming out now, is going to make a lot more money, I think, because of this publicity and afterwards. And the media and the public eat it up and eat this kind of thing up, and celebrities know it. That's why they go public with this stuff.
You know, I can somewhat understand, perhaps only for monetary reasons, why celebrities do this for publicity. But as you mentioned, that it's not just celebrities. I mean, look at all of the folks who would go on the Jerry Springer show. Look at all these people who have these, like, divorce courts on TV. I mean, what is the motivation behind airing all of your domestic problems for a national television audience? That amazes me. I can understand a celebrity doing it before I can understand just Joe Blow down the street.
Of course, the problem here is you have a best-selling author, you have a movie, and you have this story of this older woman, younger man, and so people kind of, you know, if something happens, that part of it, your celebrity is going to be in the news anyway. But because the books and the movie and everything, it kind of feels that. I don't think Terry McMillan needed this to get her books selling anymore. They sell quite well. I think she was actually devastated to find out that the man that she had married was gay, and she alleges that he was gay long before they even got together. He knew it, and he endangered her life. That's very important.
And, you know, but she's also saying that she was filing for divorce before this, or she was ready to end the marriage before she found out, and it was when she told him that she wanted to break up the marriage was when he informed her that he was gay. Now, you know, I got to wonder, you know, how is it you don't know for all of this time? Where I saw Plummer, her husband, on television the other day saying that he didn't realize until he was 20 years old that he was gay. Well, maybe so, but it makes me wonder about that.
Actually, I think she met him when he was 20. Now I think he's like 26 or 27. He's saying that he was confused, and I can make, and that he didn't realize, he's saying he didn't realize until much more recently. I can buy that argument, you know, but again, when you put your dirty laundry on the street, you make yourself open to, you know, the public's whims and cynicism. And I think if you go down to the beauty shop, you're going to hear a lot of women saying, you know, girl, please, you didn't know this. You were with him for 6 years. First of all, you're 22 years older than him. You're much more mature. I don't think there's going to be a lot of sympathy for her side of the story here.
I wonder where the gay diary is, huh?
And with the internet out there, all these documents are already on the website, on the internet. The smokinggun.com has both sides of a lot of stuff out there, even to the point where it is alleged that she changed his passwords to I Love Men. You know, it's all the sorted details out there.
And a lot of women do research on their men before they make a commitment for that very reason. And certainly Terry McMillan had the resources and wherewithal to do some homework on this man before she got too far down the road.
Have we really gotten to that point, Laura, that women are researching like that, honestly?
Absolutely. There's dating services. Do they provide that kind of research for you? There are women, because of the access you can get on the Internet, who are checking these guys out. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
But how can you check out whether somebody's gay?
Well, there are all kinds of reasons that you want to check men out.
No, I said how? I don't know how you do it. How do you do it?
Well, you could start by asking them. I wonder if you ever did that.
And you expect them to give you the right answer? They're on a down low.
You ask his friends. You can do homework on that.
But, you know, it does speak to a different problem when George mentioned people being on the down low. And that is a problem that's been written about, a problem in the black community of because of a certain level of homophobia in the black community, I guess, that there are men who go both ways and who hide this information from their women and who do put them potentially at risk because of the increased likelihood of the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. And so that is a real issue that kind of goes beyond this kind of celebrity breakup.
Oh, okay. It's way too much. Way too much for me.
It doesn't like being researched.
You ain't gonna worry about that, George Curry. All right. Laura Washington, thank you so much for joining us. Joe Davidson and George Curry, appreciate it. Very stimulating conversation. And we'll keep a watch of the Patriot Act, as we said, to see, in fact, what happens and what comes of it.